Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Kimberly. Welcome to What You Next podcast.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. So I'm an author. The book coming out on September 7th is called Friends Like These. It's my seventh novel. It's my fourth adult book. And I also have a young adult trilogy. They were all published with HarperCollins. Before I was an author, I was an attorney. And then I was an aspiring author, which took me many, many years at 5 unpublished books and 3 agents to sell my first novel. So it was a bit of a long transition between being a lawyer and becoming a published author.
So how has becoming a lawyer, being a lawyer, informed your writing? Did it help you? Did it hurt you? Did you find it easier or harder, that experience coming into your writing?
Yeah, I think it helped enormously. For a couple different reasons. Obviously, going to law school and being a lawyer teach you like a work ethic and a discipline. In terms of the hours you work, but also discipline in your writing and a kind of perfectionism that you have to, that kind of standard you have to rise to. So it helped in that way, but I think even more so because of the books I write these complex thrillers with very intricate plots that involve a lot of red herrings and twists and turns and things like that. It's actually similar to how you construct a legal argument, at least how I go about writing them. Mm-hmm. I'll put something in the book and then I'll think to myself, well, if you're a reader, how are you going to see this? What would be the possible position against it almost as a way of predicting how readers are going to react? And that's really, so you have to see both sides of it, what's actually happening, but also what you want the reader to think is happening. And that has to often work on multiple levels because you're dealing with all different kinds of readers. For instance, there's in mysteries in particular, I think there are certain kinds of readers who really just are looking for the twist. They read for that. And so they're really on alert for any sign. They're really just looking for that clue. But then there are other readers who, and actually I kind of fall into this category, funnily enough, where I'm not really searching for the twist. I'm really like following the characters and I'm often surprised as a consumer of books and television or movies. Like, I like to be surprised by the twist, so I'm not really trying to figure it out. So when I'm writing a book, I have to kind of find a space in between those two readers. So it needs to be, the story and the twist need to be apparent enough so that they'll be satisfying for the reader who's just not looking for those twists, but also not too obvious, because another type of reader will get it right away. So I'm always testing my assumptions, which is a lot of what you do as an attorney. You think, I'll make this argument, but immediately you ask yourself, what is the counter argument and what am I making myself vulnerable to? Mm-hmm. And so I really do that. And I would say that I'm most grateful for law school for having taught me that skill, because I use that every time I sit down to write anything.
I love this. I work with lawyers, so I'm comfortable enough that, basically we ask. I work in investigations, so that's usually the questions, like, what is hold in court? Like, what's the counter argument? What's the theory of the case? Like, what's the purpose? Like, there's a lot of questioning, and you gotta get comfortable just answering those questions and coming up with those answers and trying to dig in a little bit deeper of what it means,
Exactly. I mean, a lot of being an attorney, if you're a litigator or an investigator, is telling a story. Mm-hmm. And so you're really trying to lay a story out for people. So it's really the same, at least in the books that I write, I'm really doing the same exact thing. And I think you're right about thinking, like, why is this in here? Is it important? It's also, the editorial eye you have is very similar.
So do you plot or do you pants your way
I pant my way through the whole thing, and it's terrible. I wish I was a plotter. I've tried, but I need the physical process of writing, as odd as that might sound, but my hands on a keyboard. And then after I have a draft, I handwrite markings over the pages. And I have an assistant who helps me enter the changes. And then I look at it again, and then I mark it up again. And I see myself making progress as there's less and less ink on the page every time. But I probably will go through a novel like 10 times that way. And really, it's like every page, you know, the backs of pages have handwriting all over them. So it's really a kind of tactile process. Mm-hmm. And in that way, I see the story, and I really see the story through character. And, you know, there's certain things I have to figure out first. Like, I've just started a new book, my eighth, and I have to have a sense of the story I'm trying to tell in broad strokes. I need to know my point of view characters. Usually one of my point of view characters is the person something happened to. So I need to kind of know what happened. Often they're a person who's no longer alive or is in peril in some way. So I need to understand those pieces. But once I have that, and I usually have a vague sense of like the twist, like what overarching, like in Friends Like These, one of the big things I wanted to do was really deliver a twist, really at the end, like that really brought everything together. And I'd never really done that. My books certainly have twists in them, but I'd never a single twist that kind of nailed everything. And I wanted to do that. So with that, Friends Like These, when I sat down, I knew that was something I wanted to do. But how I was going to get there, I don't know. So that's the pantser part. So that's in terms of outlining, that's all I know going in. And the rest, I just really am, every day I sit down and I think I just got to get from point A to point B. And that's all I'm doing today. And that Anne Lamott, like, just take it bird by bird kind of way, I really just do that and try not to get overwhelmed, because oftentimes some of the most exciting parts of my books for me, at least, ultimately, are the things that are unexpected, the unexpected connections, the unconscious connections that I make in the writing. Like I'll put something in, I'm like, you know, and it's kind of hanging there as I go to revise. I'm like, why is this thing in here? And then I sit with it for a minute, and inevitably I can find a way to connect it to something else in a way that can open up the whole book. And so I have to stay with that process. The difficult part of that for me is that's really not in my nature. That's really improvisational and very loose and very free. And I'm really a control freak. So it's hard to just let the process be that process and not to be panicked by it. And luckily, you know, in addition to the 7 books I have published, I wrote 5 that went unpublished. So I've done this a lot. So I just try to remind myself that I've done it before. Although every writer will tell you, you still believe maybe you won't be able to do it the next time. There is a bit of of magic to it. So I just try to have faith in the process and know that even if I don't know today, that it's a good chance I'll know tomorrow.
I love this. And so what can you do for self-care? Like, what keeps you sane? You know, because some days writing is hard. So what can restore you to sanity?
Yeah, most days writing is hard. Yeah, that's definitely true. I do a lot of things. I am a runner, and also I do some triathlons. So I definitely rely on running. And I meditate every day, which if you all out there don't have the Calm app, this is going to be my advertisement for the Calm app, which is like one of my favorite things on the planet. So I highly recommend that. Yeah. So, and I just got back, actually. I'm staying in California right now, and I just got back from Joshua Tree, and I was hiking, and that was amazing. So I really do try to stay centered with those things. And it is difficult because when you're a writer, or I think engaged in anything creative, or actually have your own business, you know, your work and your life become very enmeshed. And so you have to try to find a way to break it apart. Otherwise, while you might not be in front of your computer, you're essentially always working. And that's, you know, can be a problem. So
Yes, it is. So I'm glad you mentioned plug-in meditation and movement. I think meditation is really helpful, especially when you're trying to center yourself, but letting go of that control is like a tool that allows us to be centered and to have those inspiring actions that you wouldn't think possible, but it's just that putting your seat in cushion for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, however long it is, like that can make the biggest impact of your day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I really think it's so important, and it ties directly to what I said about, you know, learning just patience with the writing process. I think if you can find a way to just stay centered and calm and find that place, it helps with everything. It helps with waiting in line. It helps with getting stuck in traffic. It helps with everything.
It does. As someone who has meditated on and off for about a decade, I'm like, it makes a whole difference. It quiets your mind, you know, yeah. A mind bath is like 5 minutes of your time. Like it doesn't take that long, just 5 minutes, just sit down, just listen to your watch, to your breath, and then like see the magic happen.
It's true. It is magic.
So tell us about Friends Like These. What is the elevator pitch?
Yeah. So the elevator pitch is, I'll go full Hollywood. I'll reference other things in the movie. So it's Big Little Lies meets The Big Chill. It's a character driven mystery about a group of college friends that are now in their early 30s who reunite at this fancy upstate New York weekend house in the Catskills to stage an intervention for one of their group. And it's an intervention that quickly goes terribly wrong. The book opens in Catterskill, which is the fictional town in the Catskills, which is really seemingly picturesque, but has this kind of dangerous underbelly of socioeconomic hardship and opioid addiction. And so that's where it opens. And one of the friends has been found dead in a car and deep in the woods. And another one of the friends is missing, and a local detective shows up on the scene to investigate. And the truth about what happened in the car lies at the intersection of kind of those two worlds. So is it some conflict between the friends and the locals in Catterskill that erupted into violence? Or is there something, you know, this kind of long held secret in the friends' past that's finally resurfaced with deadly consequences?
Gosh, I love this. And your audio is full cast audio, right?
Full cast audio. There's seven different, I think there's seven different narrators, which is so cool. it's so awesome. I heard the narrators when we were selecting them, but I heard they have a little sample, but it's only one of the narrators, the sample. So I haven't actually heard them doing it yet, but it's so cool when they do multiple people.
Yeah, I love it. I requested it. I got the notice this week and I was like, it's full cast audio. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love it. Cause there's like, yeah. It brings all the points of view and it feels like atmospheric. I think it just brings some new level experience. So, you know, like,
for sure. A big part of the book is kind of these multiple points of view. And while it has a lot of narrators, they each are kind of handing the story off to each other in a baton-like fashion. So you're not jumping around that much, so I think getting the different voices is really cool.
So how do you get in tune with having multiple points of view when you're coming up with that, like having those different voices telling the story? Do you develop the characters beforehand, or they just appear to you as you start drafting them over and over?
Yeah, it's more of an evolution, I would say. I think they kind of appear like fully formed in skeletal outline, right? So I have them in broad strokes, but then as I develop the story, and as I get into scenes, I'm like, this doesn't feel right for this person to be doing this. And then that's when I have to like take a minute and be like, all right, who is this person? Why are they here in this room? Like I immediately know when I need to develop the character further, because I don't know what they would do, or something they're doing feels not right. Mm-hmm. So that, and again, this is the nice part about being a pantser, because you're just like, oh, well, whatever. So that's all wrong what I just did, but I can just do this other thing now. And you don't care because you have no set plan. So you can course correct at any point without feeling like you've lost something. And I like that. So, there are a lot of other problems with being a dancer, a lot of work on the back end, but it does allow me to drill down on the voices and change things as I go along, as things don't feel organic.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I think it's like, I'm a pantser in many ways. Like I look at the experience, like I think it's just asking those questions. Like I just want to discover. Like I like the process of being surprised. I'm like, oh, okay, like this is interesting, or I did not expect this, and you just like take the follow the breadcrumbs, like as opposed to trying to figure out the whole plot point and the characters and figure out the Enneagram and all the fun stuff. I'm like, I just want to get to know the characters one by one a little bit more as the story follows along.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what kind of books do you read?
I read all over the place, but I would say that when I'm, and obviously I read a lot of books that are coming out that aren't out yet. That I would say is the most reading I do in my genre, particularly when I'm working on a book, which honestly is most of the time. Yep. Because I do find it distracting to be reading stuff too close to my genre, because the whole time I'm thinking about what they're doing and then why they're doing it and what other people are doing. And that is, that makes me just distracted and self-conscious about my own work. So I would say I do a lot of either fiction reading that is like classics or not in my genre, or I read nonfiction because it just is freeing. And you gain things as a writer from whatever you're reading, but it doesn't feel like it's conflicting as much. I do read books that are forthcoming. I do that all the time. But in terms of just reading too broadly in my genre, which is funny because they often, you'll publish a book and then people will make comparisons and you're like, assuming you'd read the book, and like oftentimes I haven't, I didn't even know what the books were about.
I understand. Yeah. I think it's hard to read within the genre that you're writing because you just get conflicting voices and like, it's too close to home. So sometimes it's nice, refreshing just to read nonfiction that has nothing to do with it, just to get a break, like a palate cleanser, like a good escape, I suppose.
Yeah. And also if I'm not reading stuff in my genre, I can believe that what I'm doing is so innovative. I'm like, no one's done this. That's only because I didn't read the 7 books that do it. But you just get to believe that you're creating something new. And the reality is like there's zeitgeist, right? So like oftentimes as writers, there's a reason why a bunch of books come out about the same topic. Like we're all inspired by the world around us and events, current events and things in cultural consciousness. And so, it's not that the writers have talked or know what they're writing. It's just, we all are inspired. So even if you're not reading, you find that there ends up being an interesting overlap.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just like, I think ideas are like, they have different owners of the ideas. Like the ideas, like they just, someone in the consciousness, they might fall here and you might have the idea. And then a few months later, somebody else has the same idea. And you're like, oh, like you just like, it came, like there's nothing is brand new. It's just like how you voice it, how you apply it, how you share it is that what's unique about it, Exactly. So what has been a couple of books that you recommend our listeners to pick up, whether it's forthcoming, backlist, it doesn't have to be genre specific.
Well, the one that just came out recently, or a couple that came out recently that I did read in advance and blurb was Fierce Little Thing by Miranda Beverly Whitmore and The Husbands by Chandler Baker. And they both just came out and they're both from Flatiron Books and they're both great. I recently, for the first time ever, read The Bell Jar. Which I had never read. I did a book club actually, which I may do again with just readers and my daughters, which was super fun. And I could not believe. I mean, this sounds stupid. Obviously, it's an amazing book, but I should have known that. But like, it was amazing in ways that I found unexpected. It just, to me, it was so timeless. The book, I was like, it was so modern in so many ways. Anyway, so that was amazing. And I recently read Three Women, which I thought was the writing in that. It was such an interesting way of looking at, obviously, like women and relationships and sexuality and whatever. So the content was very interesting, but her writing is just, and so I haven't read her novel yet, Animal, but I want to read it because her writing is just beautiful. There were so many lines in that I just found. That's my point about finding inspiration in stuff that, you know, it's a reminder when I read a book like that, that like, you can make something beautiful, and you can, you know, make each word matter, even in a context where you wouldn't necessarily think you would lead with language, right? Where that then isn't necessarily the point. And so I found that book very inspiring. Yeah, so that's really a really great one.
Thank you. So tell us where you can find you online.
Yeah, so I am online. I'm on Instagram at Kimberly McCreight, and my name is KimberlyMcCreight. And my website is my full name, and Twitter, where I'm not as active. I would say I'm probably most active on Instagram, and I'm also on Facebook.
Thank you, Kimberly, for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. Today's episode's partner is Libre FM. If you're an audiobook listener, then you should add Libre FM as your go-to source for paid audiobooks. Libre FM makes it possible for you to buy audiobooks through your local bookstore. Memberships start at $14.95, and they also have great sales for romance audiobooks each month for $3.99, thanks to the Kiss Club. To sign up for LibreFM, please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/LibreFM. You will receive a free audiobook when you sign up for a monthly subscription. If you purchase a subscription through our link, you will be supporting the podcast at no cost to you. The What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Please visit frolic.media/podcast to discover new shows to tune in. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.